Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Marius Ruit. Let's get into the first news story of today, and this is from Health Minister Aaron Motsoaledi, who has done something I think disappointing, but unfortunately a little bit predictable. He has talked about the reaction to the National Health Insurance Scheme that government relatively recently signed into law and is now looking at implementing across the country. This law, when it is finally implemented, it's supposed to be sort of phased in over a significant period of time, would essentially eliminate private medical aid. There would still be private hospitals, but essentially all or the vast majority of healthcare spending would be decided by the state through the National Health Insurance. Motsoaledi says that that the introduction of NHI has raised fire and fury, and that there is fear-mongering like there was in the apartheid days. He said, "We thought those days had passed. Unfortunately, the need for equality in healthcare is bringing that strategy to the fore." He described attempts to demonize NHI as a swat ghevaar doctrine, similar to what has been used in the past to keep down Black South Africans. The implication being here that the reaction to NHI is entirely some sort of racial complaint. Now, Marius, there are so many angles to attack this from, this absolute nonsense from the healthcare minister. But of course, one of the primary ones, I think, is to highlight the fact that I think I'm correct in saying that the majority of people who hold private medical insurance are in fact not white. In fact, they're Black. What do you make of what the minister is saying here?
I'm not sure the exact numbers, but whites are actually a minority of people who have medical aid. It's obviously a higher proportion than white people's proportion of the population, but it's incorrect to say that whites are somehow, you know, benefiting from this private sector to the detriment of everybody else. And also, what you must also remember is that people pay their medical aid fees out of their private after-tax income. This is money people, you're not forced to use medical aid. I'm sure a lot of people listening to the show today have medical aid. And depending on your age and what kind of medical aid you have, you're probably paying between 2 to even up to 10,000 rand a month. But this is people's after-tax money they've decided now to spend on medical insurance. You don't have to spend that money in there. You can spend it wherever you want. But people have made this decision. But now with NHR, people would be forced to pay even more taxes into a system that doesn't particularly work that well. And we should be looking at ways of firstly improving the public system, but also expanding private care, letting more people access the private system. And there's a whole host of ways you can do that through vouchers, tax-funded health vouchers, through making it easier for people to join medical aids, to allowing low-cost medical aid, which isn't allowed at the moment. So there's all kinds of ways we can expand people's access to private healthcare, which would also then help take some pressure off the public healthcare system. But it doesn't seem that the government wants to do that. And even the NHR, the people say, you know, they'll point to places like the UK or Canada and say, look, they have the NHR NHR type systems, which may all be true. But those systems, the NHS in the UK is under lots of pressure. But they aren't going to go as far as the NHR will go, yeah, which is basically going to ban private medical aids. In the UK, you can still have your own private medical aid if you want. There's no law stopping you from doing that. The NHR would actually effectively outlaw private medical aids. So it's a system that's not going to work. The ministers, his protestations are really, I mean, it's not even, it's just the normal kind of rhetoric. It doesn't, you know, there's no real substance to what he's saying and just, you know, ridiculous playing of the race card. And he hasn't grappled with anybody's real concerns, which is how are we going to pay for this? And there's been talk about raising taxes, but taxes would have to go up by an absolutely eye-watering amount, and the country simply can't afford it.
Exactly. The amount of devastation that NHI promises to cause if it is fully implemented is quite significant. Many healthcare professionals are very unhappy with how the system will work and don't trust the state to implement it. They're likely to seek better opportunities overseas. Many people in the middle classes will be hesitant to essentially hand over the money that they pay for healthcare to the state. and possibly end up either in private hospitals whose quality is much lower or in state hospitals where, you know, and I have had friends who have just been left to die in those hospitals. You know, there are some good people in those systems, but they are horrendously inadequate for the job that they're supposed to do. And this is very much, I think, a reversion to kind of the same old ANC. You know, as much as the ANC is talking about renew, here we go. The ANC is implementing a boneheaded policy which will create a lot of destruction, not really help out that many people. And they're playing the race card to defend it. And I think it's actually at this point, getting to the point where both the president has to make clear whether he agrees with the health minister here, and the members of the GNU who are opposed to NHI, such as the Freedom Front Plus and the DA, must start to speak up, I think, a little bit more publicly about exactly what's going on here, not just in Parliament, but also through media statements saying, can the minister please, you know, does this represent what the ANC as a whole is trying to push here? We know that NHI is already law. There has been some talk from the ANC about, you know, addressing concerns around aspects of NHI. There's been a lot of sort of fuzzy gobbledygook, which you can't really pin down. And I think that it's imperative now that we know whether Motsoaledi truly is speaking for the whole ANC. Maurice, any final thoughts?
No, I think you got a spot on there. And Motsoaledi's also said that if this is the end of the GNU, then so be it, which is obviously also a bit concerning. And as the just, I mean, there's no, this NHI hasn't been costed. We don't know how it's going to get paid for. And it's just ridiculous that the ANC wants to keep pushing this kind of healthcare reform, which we don't know how it's going to work, and it probably won't work.
I'd just also like to remind the ANC that when they signed NHI into law just before the election, their polling numbers actually went down. So it's clearly not some sort of huge vote winner, even if the ANC perhaps thought it would be. Anyway, let us go on to our next story, and this is about South Africa's economy in the second quarter of the year, and growth is still very weak, unfortunately. Now, we have definitely, this is the first quarter I think we've had in a while where there's been absolutely no load shedding. So I think perhaps there might have been some hope that there would be a little bit more growth. There's also been a revision to the first quarter of the year's economic growth where the growth was revised upwards. Originally, it was reported that in the first quarter of this year, the economy shrank by 0.1%. But apparently, the revision says that it is actually grew at 0.0%, in other words, no growth. So first quarter, no growth. Second quarter, 0.4% growth. We still seem to be kind of heading towards that 1% growth that many economists have predicted. This was actually slightly below estimates. And I think, Maurice, it's a reminder that sort of good vibes and optimism are not really going to change the economic outlook. What's going to change the economic outlook is different policies.
Yeah, I think, good vibes are, they also play a role, I think. And we've already seen...
They're step one in the process.
Exactly. And we've already seen how good vibes have seen the JSC. I think it's reached record levels. The Rand strengthened a bit. It got to about 1770 odd from being over 19 Rand just before the election. So vibes are definitely part of it. But you're right. You've got to actually have real policies that change things. And yeah, without that, we're going to carry on being this kind of in the doldrums. The country will carry on going backwards. People will carry on getting poorer. And it's not just... unemployment's going to stay as high as it is. And as I've said before on the show, we've got to remember that behind each of these numbers, there's a real person that doesn't have a job or doesn't have enough money to pay for whatever in the month and all those kind of knock-on effects. And the only way you can change that is when we get economic growth of 4, 5, or 6%, which will really change people's lives. And yeah, and that's, as I said before on the show, this the biggest tragedy of post-apartheid South Africa is our absolutely terrible unemployment rate.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, let's move very quickly to our last story, which is looking at overseas. And there is been some local elections in Germany that have recently caused a bit of shockwaves around the world, at least in media reporting, where the Alternative for Deutschland, The very right-wing party in Germany managed to secure 32 seats in an 88-member state parliament in the state of Thuringia, which is the first time they've ever come first in that state election. And they also almost came first in the state of Saxony, but slightly missed it. I believe both of those states were formerly in East Germany, which has always been the alternative for Deutschland AfD's stronghold. The election result was not particularly that bad for the center-right Christian Democratic Union. This is the party that, until just a few years ago, had been the dominant party in Germany. But the left-wing, the sort of center-left Greens, FDP, and SDP all took a real hammering. There was also a big split in the far-left parties, with the Left Party, as it's called in Die Linke, I think is the official name in Germany. Has split into Die Linke being the one party and the BSW being the other. So it looks like the far left have split, with the insurgent party doing very well, and the sort of more right-wing parties also have kind of overtaken, managed to take a lot of votes, it seems, from the center left. What do you make of this, Maurice?
Yeah, I think it's showing that there's some problems in Germany. Obviously, things such as the economy and immigration that's behind the rise of these parties, such as the AfD and this party that split from the left, the BSW, and to give its full name, the Bundesfahrerwachenknecht. But also at the same time, these two states, I think together, they make about 7 or 8% only of Germany's population. So it's I think we before everybody starts panicking and saying this means that the Nazis are going to be coming back soon. They're pretty small states, but you need to look at the trend as well. We can't pretend that there isn't that the populist right and the populist left aren't gaining some traction. Yeah, and at the same time, you also got to ask yourself why these parties are gaining traction. No, not everybody's voting for the AfD is a mad Nazi, and not everybody's voting for this BSW is a mad lefty communist who wants the East Germany to come back. They're people with real concerns, and you have to interrogate why they asked them to vote for these extremist populist parties. And I think, and this is kind of thing that's it's a bit overblown, I think. I mean, as you were saying before the show, I think it's there has been a bit of a lot of the talking heads and chattering class have been talking about how the right is on the rise in Europe, and I think as we were saying, it's much more complex than that. In parts of Europe, I do think the right is gaining strength, especially Germany is a place, but in other parts of
Yes.
Europe, Spain, Poland, the Nordics, it isn't quite that isn't quite the case. But I do think the German political establishment does have some soul searching to do, yeah, and this could cause yeah, it's Yeah, I don't know. It's quite a bit. It is quite concerning for Germans, I think. And but as I say, it's the people aren't voting for these parties because they're mad extremists. There's real concerns behind the way the people vote, and these need to be addressed, I think.
Yes. It'll be interesting to see what happens in Austria next month, because there's going to be a national government election there, where the sort of far right Freedom Party of Austria looks set to come first, mostly campaigning on an anti-immigration platform. But once again, it's going to probably be a lot like what's just happened here in Germany, which is that the other parties will form a coalition together to keep them out of government, because even the biggest party only gets sort of 25-ish, 20, 30% of the vote at most. I do think, though, that the German center left seems to be in a lot of trouble right now. And I wonder whether the SPD is going to get a bit of a bloody nose in the next federal German election. Anyway, it remains to be seen. But thank you for watching. We hope you found the show interesting, and we will be back on the Daily Friend Wrap tomorrow. Cheers, everyone. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR, or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.